Today's episode of CougarCast is brought to you by Neater's Bakery and Cafe. Great time of year to go to Neater's. Get a gift basket. There's just enough time left. Is all your Christmas shopping done, Tosh?
No. After the show, I'm grabbing my son, and we're going to go kind of round up the ends of that.
Okay. Well, you know, sometimes it's hard to know what to do for mom and dad. You know, I think a gift basket from Neater's actually would be a pretty nice gift for them.
The other thing that I take advantage of this time of year is when I have family in town. I've said this before, but I think going to Neater's breakfast is an impressive thing. Like, yeah. Their French toast is unlike anyone else's French toast.
But it's also nice on the wallet, right?
Totally.
It makes everybody happy in that way, too. Happy stomachs, happy wallets.
Neater's.
It's a great... Neater's. Anyway, Neater's Bakery and Cafe. Again, for all of you people in Provo, go check them out on Bulldog Boulevard and also down the road by the Riverwoods. They've got an awesome location down there at the Riverwoods. Anyway, great place to maybe, you know, go eat at the Riverwoods. Then there's a movie theater near there. Might be a good little date night. Anyway, the bottom line is Neater's Bakery and Cafe, proud sponsor of CougarCast. And now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast. See what the guys have to say on Cougar Board. Find them at 4Mac and CougarCast.
Welcome to CougarCast. My name is Keith Schertz, and I am with the 2002 Daily Herald Utah County Name of the Year, Tosh Scott McIntosh.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Christmas season is fun, but what makes it more fun is talking some BYU sports.
Yeah, of course. Always can cut out a little time to neglect the family and talk BYU sports. Even after a depressing, tough loss... Overtime loss in Eugene, Oregon. Old Phil Knight with his smug clothes that have been built in sweatshops. he's sitting there going, oh, I'm glad we've won. Win the game in overtime. Frankly, BYU fans should feel lucky to have even received an overtime after a wild finish. 1.8 seconds left. I was dying. They had hit. It felt like Oregon hit every free throw and we hadn't hit any. And then the guy stepped up and clanked a couple of them.
But really, in the end, all that did is just make our misery worse.
Sure.
Well, even when he missed those, I felt like 10% happy. And then just I still felt sick, though. Like, I know we're going to lose in overtime. We have no bigs.
Sure.
This game is coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Yeah. Yeah. Mika just burned through those fouls in the second half. So
I love me some Mika, but it was his worst game of the year.
You thought so?
Yeah, well, those fouls in the second half, and then I point to a few crucial plays, one of which, in the crunch, right at the end, he two consecutive turnovers.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff that went bad in that game.
Can I list a few real quick just to get them off my chest? Yeah. So that one was big. The other one, I mean, we lost in overtime. We were tied. So any one of these things goes the other way, we win. The other thing is... back-to-back possessions where we foul the three-point shooter who then makes all three free throws. Like, when does that happen?
That's gifting points.
Yeah. Yep. The other one is just...
Who are the foulers on that? We should call them out.
So it was Mika and... no, that's not true. It was Austin, Nate. Yep. Austin, and Sharp, which both of them are shot blockers. And so I think that's how they help on
team. You mean like the Cyclops that is... It's like they're the one and the same. It's like, you know, it's a beautiful thing. One's a little bit taller, but frankly, it's like, aren't they the same?
They are. And
it's like if Rose takes Austin off the floor, it's like, we still have the same thing. We're still playing 4-on-5 on offense. And
but in Austin, I actually think it was Austin's best game. I think that us not having him in overtime is what killed us.
He finally fulfilled his destiny, which he saw a little bit in the NIT, which is just to be a crazy hustle guy and play defense like a mother.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And bored. He was bored.
And bored. And that's the point, though, is I feel like that's all you got to do if you're Nate Austin, right? We're not looking to you to score. So ratchet up the intensity defensively. Of course, when he does that, though, I mean, he fouled up.
What I will say,
but that's okay. I'd rather have him foul out and play the way he did than you know, live to the end of the game and play the way that he has.
What concerning him and a lot of our players, and I know everyone's going to be rolling their eyes that I mentioned Carlino in this group, but I felt like as a team that our guys had a better understanding of what their role was this game.
Absolutely.
And that is really
a week of coaching really came across in this game.
Yeah. Where guys played their role, except Carlino right at the end kind of went back to his old self. But
I will chronicle that later. But okay, so that, get other things off your chest, stuff that bothered you.
Free throws,
obviously. Yeah, everyone's complaining about that.
To say names, you know, Mika and Collinsworth.
Yep.
And then a little bit, I thought Rose coached a great game.
Yes.
But
I agree.
At the end, when we're up, you know, when we're up and with 2 minutes left, he was letting them just have their possessions where they were taking no time off the clock. I think they should have guarded the inbound, pressured them even bringing it up court, just to make them wear more clock off.
Mm-hmm. I don't think that they're already so bad defensively. I think pressing's a bad idea.
Even with one guy? I think just one. I mean, they were having
Yeah, maybe the one guy.
They were having 5-second possessions, and it was just making me pull my hair out.
You're right. Maybe one guy. I think you could survive that, yeah.
They were doing the, you know, let it roll all the way to not start.
And yeah, make them pick it up, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Any others? Yeah, any others?
Those are the big ones. I mean, there was the Collinsworth missed layup. I thought Collinsworth played good, though, but in crunch time where it looked like he had an easy look right at the basket, and he kind of did this weird body angle layup that missed it, and those happen.
So before this season began in our preview, we both had the feeling that there was going to come a point when the old bench was going to start singing the name of Matt Carlino.
And
are you sensing that?
I think that it should.
He's getting less and less and less minutes.
I would say coming into this year, I was one of the biggest Carlino defenders out there. I'm at the point, though, now, and I think this is for his good, that I think that it would be worthwhile to start Halford for a couple games, still play Carlino big minutes, and then just go with the guy who's playing smarter and more efficient and better basketball at the end of the game. Where, again, I think that's give Carlino the same amount of minutes he's been having the last couple games, because you're right, it has gone down. But I just think it's going to put in his head that he is accountable. He has to run the offense. Yeah. He needs to pass it to Haas.
Right, right. You still can't be using more possessions than anybody else on the floor. Listen, this is how I'll break this down, okay? The final 2 minutes.
The worst 2 minutes.
Of regulation.
Okay.
The final 2 minutes of regulation. Entering that. Tyler Haas, at this point in the game, has 30 points, okay? Or no, he had 28 points on 11 of 18 shooting, okay? 11 of 18 shooting at that point. Going to the final 2 minutes of regulation, right? He's your dynamite free throw shooter, right? You get 5 possessions in the final 2 minutes of regulation. 3 of them are used by Matt Carlino playing hero ball. One is Nate Austin was fouled on a rebound, and he went to the line, went 1-for-2. And then Haas finally got a shot right at the very end, and he missed it. But we had 5 possessions with 2 minutes left, right? We had a lead, and we only got 1 point in that period.
And we all knew it was coming. I was watching Cougar Board simultaneously, and people are like, here comes Carlino hero ball. Like, this is where Carlino doesn't pass anymore. And then it just seemed like that's what happened. Like,
he's the worst shooter on the team in terms of efficient, effective field goal percentage. I mean, he's the worst. He's the worst shooter on the team.
I feel like some of our losses in so many big games, I also got the sense, though, that I didn't feel like anyone was confident or wanted the ball in their hands except Carlino.
Well, wait a second, though. He has the ball in his hands because he helps bring it up the floor. But I thought Oregon actually was picking their poison. And they were giving him space. And he can't help himself. He's got a little extra space. Gosh, I'll make the play. I'm going to make it happen. He can't help himself. You know? The one thing Oregon said is we're going to make sure that, fine, we're happy to have Carlino taking shots. We're not letting Haas going to get it. But they should have been dogged and smart and thinking about it more. You know, a lot of people are complaining, like, Haas can't get space. He can't get open. He's not athletic enough to get open. Well, part of that is true, but I also think that's a stupid criticism of him because he runs all over the place. He'll eventually shake free a little bit. You just got to be patient. The other bit is if he's having trouble the way he is, we need to have more offensive sets that give him a double screen to run off of, that give him more opportunities to get open, right? And I don't see a whole lot of that. And it was especially difficult in overtime for him to get open because both of his screeners, his primary screeners, are off the floor.
This game actually gave me more confidence that he can get open against athletic guys.
That's what I think, too.
This is that's the most athletic team we've played, and he dropped 30
plus. And he can shoot with guys in his face like it's no problem. I mean, gosh, dang it, man. That guy was great. The whole point is I tweeted out, right? We got 7-8 minutes left. It's Tyler Haas time. He's one of the 10 best players that's ever played at BYU, right? He is in the upper echelon of anyone to ever play at BYU. And down the stretch in the last 10 minutes, Tyler Haas only got the ball in an offensive set 4 times.
That's just disgusting.
4 times. 4 times.
Yeah.
Okay, let me talk overtime for a minute. Final 2 minutes of overtime, BYU in that section was able to get 7 possessions. 7. Okay? And with those 7 possessions, Carlino used another 3 of them. Collinsworth used 2 of them. And Haas got the ball once during that. And then Bartley had the one where he got called on his charge, which was frustrating.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is during the final 2 minutes of both regulation and of overtime, right, we only went to Tyler Haas twice. And he went 1-for-2 in those scenarios. And we only end up scoring 3 points in both, if you combine both of them. We only got 3 points in the final 2 minutes of both regulation and overtime combined. Terrible. That is terrible. That is terrible. And the fact of the matter is 12 possessions total if you combine them. Carlino used 6 of them. That's half of our looks went to Carlino. Half. He's our least efficient offensive player by a long way. Anybody else would have been a better look. According to the advanced stats.
The hard part about taking him off the court, and I know you agree with me here, is that in this game, he looked like he was our best defensive player, though.
I think he, not just this game, I think he probably is our best defender.
So, like,
he forced a few turnovers. I mean, gosh, dang it, man. It's really tough. What a problem. The problem is you want, Carlino's a very good player who's skilled and all that stuff. Does he realize how much of a problem he is for his coaches?
I don't think he realizes.
Usually you want to be a kid that when you're on the floor, it's like, old coach, he can count on me. I'm old, reliable. He knows what he's going to get out of me. He knows what we're at. And basically everything that Carlino does makes his coaches go, what do we do about this? He's so talented. He's so skilled. He's got all this. But, he murders us sometimes. You know, I mean, down the stretch of the game, he used 6 possessions. You know, he missed his free throw on purpose and then tried to shoot a 3 even though they were down 4. Like, that was – I guarantee that wasn't Dave Rose who asked for that to happen.
Yeah.
That was Carlino acting on his own. And it's like that general lack of awareness is indicative
of his game.
The entire problem that every BYU fan has with Matt Carlino besides, like, again, Steve Pierce, the post-Jimmer guy, like – is just blinded by his love of this guy. But there's no, he's like the only guy that will defend him no matter what. I'm sure he's so upset with, like, you know, he listens and that's, I'm sure that this is bothering him. My whole thing though is like, that lack of awareness of not knowing you're down four, and now I'm going to try to make the play and shoot the three and be the hero and stuff. It's like that not understanding a game scenario, your limitations, all those things. That entire thing is like just indicates everything that drives a BYU fan crazy about Matt Carlino.
I think the only thing that Rose could do to maybe get in this guy's head is, I think, the Halford thing. I'm being serious about this.
Well, wait a second. It helped a lot. Like, so for instance, he had another guy that was like that, right?
Tavernari.
And he benched him and put in Noah. Now, it helped that Noah was one of the 50 best players to ever play at BYU. But he put in Noah Hartsock in. He benched Tavernari as a senior, and he managed Tavernari. And whenever Tavernari kind of got out of pocket, he benched him. And I think Carlino is working himself by the way he plays and stuff. The best option for him is to sit on the bench. And beyond that, Rose played, and they were very, very strict with the way it worked. Is Collinsworth is going to run our offense. Carlino is kind of play off of him, and we are not looking to work through Carlino. Carlino is not running things for us.
Yeah.
And it worked a lot better in that first half.
So the other thing I would say, that even just to hit that even harder, of why Carlino needs to get the ball to Hawes in crunch time, is we've seen over and over and over now, and if you're a coach, why wouldn't you think this, that when you play BYU, you just foul them a lot. Put those guys to the line a lot. I think our counter move to that, our best player is lights out from the free throw line. Once they're in the penalty, I want the ball in Hawes' hand every possession. I'll take my odds of him getting a shot or getting fouled.
Even if you went to him 8 of the 12 possessions and let Carlino take a couple, you know Hawes is going to get to the line a couple times in that stretch. Yeah. And that's all it would have taken, by the way. I mean, instead of I'm just looking in the original and regulation. You know, we had a wild layup opportunity and then two wild threes by Carlino. That's what we got. The other one we got was Hawes. He got the ball 15 feet. He tried a shot. He missed. And then, of course, Austin went to the line. The bottom line is this, though, is if you take away even one of those three-point attempts, there's a good chance that if you get it to Hawes, he's going to find his way to the line. He's going to make that happen for him.
Yep.
Ugh. And if he gets to the line, he's going to make one, and then we don't go to overtime. Oh, my gosh.
So here's
frustrating.
Here's my last thing. My last point I want to get out there on the Oregon game is that if we win that game, I think we're in the tournament. Almost no matter what happens, as long as we just don't totally fall on our face in
meltdown,
the conference.
Yeah, or injuries or something.
That we're in, and it's just, my gosh, now we're still again.
So here's all BYU's proof to this point, right? Against the truly elite teams, we're going to lose. So why put us in? Why put us in as a 13 seed to play a 4 seed? We're going to lose that game.
Like, yeah. The point is, 13 seed though, kind of in that
the 12-5. Yeah. Well, you're right. Like, there's a reason why high seed teams are high seed teams. What I'm saying though is that they like at least to see that this is a team that, I don't know, BYU's had their shot. They'd like to give it to South Dakota State, right, or whatever, and see if South Dakota State, who hasn't had a chance to play that team, get that going. BYU's had chance against really good teams this year who are going to be highly ranked teams, and we've lost all those games. And they're good teams.
I need to throw in there Stanford and Texas, though. As they keep winning, they could be our saving grace.
Yeah, and they both had big wins this last week. But what I mean is like, I guess where I'm coming from, though, is if the selection committee starts taking a look at it, there will be a really good argument made by those in the selection committee where they will say BYU's had their chance at good teams. They don't beat them. Now, they have a chance. Again, they're going to have 6 games against good RPI teams in conference. Right? St. Mary's, Gonzaga, and?
Pacific. Nice addition.
Yeah. So conference play's coming up now, and it's imperative that they just collect wins and go. And frankly, this opening weekend of play is going to be interesting. They get another week of practice to get ready, and they got Loyola Marymount on Saturday. The only thing I'd mention about a Loyola Marymount is they got Anthony Ireland, who, you know, is a problem for a lot of teams in the West Coast Conference. He's never really been that big of a problem for BYU, but Anthony Ireland is a very nice player for Loyola Marymount.
And we got a week of practice prepping. I'm confident with this game, but we got two tough games. The WCC top to bottom has really shown well in preseason.
Well.
That I'm really pleased with where we stand there. And
what's Loyola Marymount's record?
They are, let me find them right here. They are 8-4, so they actually have a better record than we do. And then so we play them on Saturday. The following
Monday, then we got a game against San Diego,
who's 9-4, so also has a better record.
San Diego's a good team, man. We played them last year. Did they eliminate us? They did. We played them in the West Coast Conference tournament. And they beat us. And that Johnny D, he's blonde. He looks like a surfer kid. He looks like a model for Volcom. Like he's just got the square jaw. He's playing for San Diego. He's got the blonde hair. The dude shoots like crazy. He has just owned and destroyed Carlino. You know, Carlino is an interesting defender. I don't know. Sometimes
this year he seems a lot better than last year.
He seems a little bit better. But the point is like that Johnny D is a good player. If he gets hot and things get going, that game at San Diego can be tough. However, BYU, and this is the thing that's hard about this season, they are that far away from being an elite, not just good, an elite basketball team in this country.
Agreed. I think that...
What's missing?
I would point to number one is just mental toughness. We're not mentally where we need to be. And just we don't have that instinct of just... winning games.
So can I give an illustration of that? I'm on the same page with you. The killer instinct. The bottom line is, and we've played four ranked opponents this year. We've been in the lead against three of those four ranked opponents with 4 minutes left. We've been winning the game with 4 minutes left, and then we ended up losing.
And we've had double-digit leads in, I think, three out of those four games, too.
Yeah. So... Now, here's but the best illustration, and I haven't really seen this year against anybody that's decent, is that, so basketball, you get on a little bit of run, now you're up 7, 8, 9 points, 10 points, right? And the other team goes, uh-oh, it's starting to get away from us, so we got to change our defensive philosophy, we got to play a little harder, we got to do this and that, right? So they ratchet it up a little bit, right? Winning in that moment, you can win, in this moment, you can win. Is if when they ratchet it up, you ratchet it up a little bit, and now you take your lead from 9 to 15, and then from 15 to 20, and if you get up 20, it's really hard to lose. And the point is like we're getting the lead on people, and then we're letting them hang around. And I don't know if that's a toughness thing or what, but we let everybody hang around, everybody. And what I'd like to see them develop is that killer instinct of saying, like, hey, we can finish these guys right now. There's 15 minutes left in the second half. We're up by 12. It's time to push this to 20. And they never do it.
They are playing the game. The teams we're talking about are elite teams.
Yeah, and I know. So, I realize that. What I'm saying, though, is if they do that even once, they have a marquee win.
Yeah.
Even one time.
The other – I totally agree with you.
Utah did it, and they got a win against us.
Mental toughness is the biggest thing. Right there, close to that, in my eyes, though, what this team lacks is a ball distributor who gets the ball to the right guy in key situations. Like, we just don't have that.
Well, and I think that's what Dave Rose is trying to find. I think that's the exact reason why he's tinkered with...
Running the offense through Collinsworth.
Running the offense through Collinsworth. I mean, gosh, at the Dave Rose show on KSL, right? I mean, gosh, what he said, this is Dave Rose speaking. When we get behind, we really want to seem to speed up and try to score 4 or 5 points on a possession and shoot really quick. So we kind of need to get some leadership out there from the point guard spot.
Yeah, we all know who he's talking about, even before he calls out point guard. But then that just hit the hammer home that he sees the same things we're seeing.
Our point guards aren't looking to find our best scoring options enough. By the way, I love Dave Rose because he says that. He's honest about it and stuff. Like I feel like if like we saw it with Riley Nelson when he was having a hard game. Like Bronco will never, ever, ever say like, well, we got to get more production from our quarterbacks.
Yeah.
He'll never say anything like that. And I think it's good to say some of that stuff and say like, hey, you know, you fans, we're seeing the same thing you're seeing. We're working on it. It makes me feel better as a fan. Doesn't it make you feel better as a fan?
Totally. Oh, I love Rose. I think I felt part of my pain after this Oregon loss was just Rose just seemed like such like a hurt puppy. Like I just felt bad for the guy because I thought he coached a great game against an unbelievably athletic team, went up there. Anyway,
tough game though, and good prediction by the way.
Yeah, my score was almost identical too.
Well done, sir.
So what matters to me as a BYU fan, and especially at this point in the season, is just making the tournament. I think that's what makes this season a success. Obviously, I want to go far, but what makes it a success or not a success is making the tournament.
Right.
Where do you feel like we're at right now?
Don't you think we're a one-and-done tournament team? Wouldn't you rather go to the NIT Final Four? Yeah, that was such bull crap last year.
I don't ever buy that.
So many people were buying into that, though.
No one was. They were lying to themselves and to people around
them. We've talked about this briefly, and you just said when you have an ugly date to the prom, you think that she's pretty. Anyway, you know, the man, the myth, the legend himself, Jackson Emery, was tweeting that he thought the team was probably out, that they've already played themselves out of the tournament.
I disagree, but I think that we do have to play really well in conference. What I say, I think if we lose three games, that we're a bubble team. I think if
we're already a bubble team. I think we're already a bubble team.
Well, yeah, as of now, like if they did it now. But I think that if we only lose two games, I think we're in.
Yeah,
I think the WCC is a good enough conference that two teams will make it.
What if we beat everybody, but we lose both times to Gonzaga?
I think we're in because we're going to beat. That means we beat Pacific twice.
Yeah,
we beat St. Mary's, who's only lost one game. That means we beat them twice.
Beating St. Mary's is not easy. Have we beaten those guys yet since we've been in the WCC? Oh my gosh, we haven't.
We've beat them.
No, we haven't
at all.
I don't think we've beaten them at all since we've been in the WCC.
I think we have.
No, the Dell of the Dagger happened last year, and we lost at their place. And
the year before, I thought we split with them.
No, we lost both games to them. We split with Gonzaga the year before.
Huh.
We have never beaten St. Mary's when we played them. All right, now let's focus just for a minute, though. So we're just going to have to play it out and see how it goes. They got to rack up wins, and they got to continue to win and win and win and win and win. And, you know, they need to show well for themselves. There's six games now that are important resume games that are going to play out in the conference. But they can't have any slip-ups. There can't be losses to San Diego's or to Loyola Marymount's or at home to San Francisco. They have given themselves no wiggle room at this point. They can't lose to bad teams anymore.
The only thing that gives them wiggle room at this point is beating Gonzaga. If they beat them once, it gives us a little bit of wiggle room. If they beat them twice, then I think we could even drop a couple bad games. But that's why I really think that it's just two losses. We can lose twice and we're in. Mm-hmm. Three.
Starts to get tricky. So you're saying they got to split and then they got to split with Gonzaga and St. Mary's, and then they've got a sweep Pacific.
Yep.
Okay.
And there could be some other dang good teams. The records are nice.
And the RPI for the conference, for West Coast Conference, is pretty good. And I think this is the strongest year for from top to bottom for this conference in a long time.
There's no team that's below 500.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it should be fun. Here's what I know we've had a lot of conversations about this, that what in my optimistic fanhood, I'm really hoping that this crazy preseason schedule we've played has just prepared us that we can roll through.
Refiner's fire, Tosh. Refiner's fire.
We roll through the conference, and we look back, and we laugh at this Oregon game that we cared so much. Like,
I'm never going to laugh about this Oregon
game. Yeah, me neither. But what if we sweep the conference? Then all of a sudden we're back to a dang good seed, and we all look at, man, that preseason, it was fun. Sure, it was some heartbreakers, but it really got our team ready to play. And I don't think that's beyond the realm of possibility.
And by the way, I've been off a little bit. We're also playing San Diego after, but it goes Loyola Marymount, and then we're playing at Pepperdine. Pepperdine is the bottom feeder of the conference. They're not a good team. They have the very best campus in the conference, though. Have you been there?
I haven't. My uncle graduated from there.
Oh, really? It's in Malibu?
And he's very successful. So because of that, I know Pepperdine's good, but I think of it as like...
No, Pepperdine's
that's where
great
rich
school.
People go because Pepperdine's he's done very school. Successful business-wise after graduating from
the
there.
The campus there is incredible. It's in Malibu, and it's just tucked away, you know, but it's close to L.A., and it's gorgeous there. Anyway, they're not losing to Pepperdine this year.
No.
BYU's better than Pepperdine. It's just the way it goes. They're going to be fighting against Loyola Marymount. They're going to get both these games. The only one, and Loyola Marymount makes you a little nervous because, you know, when you have a really skilled player, if he gets hot and things kind of go his way for Anthony Ireland, there's a chance you can lose.
Yeah.
There's always a chance when you have one really good player that can make things happen.
They're both away games.
Both away games. I think they're going to be fine.
We go 2-0 before we talk again. That's just because I think a big part is this week of practice. And yeah, these teams are tough, but we've played elite teams. Mm-hmm. And I think, if anything, our players know that they can hang with elite teams. They should be able to beat good teams and decent teams.
Well, not only that, they had them on their heels. I mean, again, winning with 4 minutes left. And I bet if I went back in all the games and we looked at who's using possessions down the stretch of these games and when we need to close it out and win and stuff, I bet we didn't go to Tyler Haws. We did go to Tyler Haws against Stanford, and we did go to Tyler Haws against Texas. And yeah. What was the result of those games?
Wins.
So we have got to go the way of the guy that is he's our man. He is our man. And I know that he doesn't play with the ball in his hands and stuff like that, but you've got to figure out a way to get him into that. And then you also have to have – you've got to get Matt Carlino to buy in and believe. I think Collinsworth is ready to do it, but like I just – you've got to find a way to get Carlino to get the self-awareness and understand that he's not Tyler Haws. Tyler Haws is your guy. It's 12 for 20 in the game.
That's such a tough pill to swallow, but he's not the best player on the team.
He's not.
And that's what it comes down to.
And it's never happened to him. In his entire life, he's never been the second best player on the team. And now he is.
He was the highest rated out of high school out of anyone on our team.
Right.
And he's still living on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's just it's what a challenge. Can you imagine? What a challenge for these coaches.
Fun
because you can't bench him. You got to play him. He's good. He's talented. But maybe you use him in the Tavernari role. Bring him off the bench, and if he's on and he's got it, then leave him. If he doesn't, then you don't play him.
You know what? You know what Rose should have done that would have fit perfectly. Remember the Cardinals, the NFL, Arizona Cardinals.
They
coach?
Are who they thought we are.
That speech could have gone exactly with this Oregon game. They are who we thought they are.
We let him off the
hook. We let him off the hook. If you want to crown him, go ahead and crown him. You know, like there's exactly what happened in
you
this
edited
game.
Edited it a little bit there, but
well, yeah,
I'm happy. You know, I'm happy to
for the BYU fans,
yeah, that's
but
good.
It was that's how I felt. I'm sure that's how Rose felt. But and if anything, what I hope is that our players mentally are still just grinding. That they didn't put too much onto those big games. And that they just practice dang hard this week because I think
three and five in the 8 big games. I mean, gosh, woo! It's tough.
I'm really though confident going into conference play. I say we're debatably the best team in the conference.
No, I still will stick by my gut. I think we're going to win this conference. I do. I just think that we got to do some soul searching here, and we got to find the right balance, and we got to play the way that accentuates our strengths. And we're not doing that throughout the entirety of the game.
We're going that direction now.
We're finding sections like this is another thing too. We're finding sections where Haws has a hot half, and then the other half he doesn't do all that much. Like he doesn't have very many complete games, and that's a problem.
Yeah,
that's a problem. So if you're finding them and that's a coaching thing because that's adjustments that get made between halves and stuff. And you've got to figure out how to make.
I actually don't think it's a Haws problem as much as it is point to a system or point guard getting him the ball. I just feel like if he only has 4 touches In what did you say, a 10-minute span?
In the last 7 minutes of the game.
If he only has four touches in a seven-minute span,
got four looks at the
that's not a Haas problem. That's a we're not getting him the freaking ball problem.
Yeah, yeah. And he went 3 for 4, so, by the way. He was shooting like crazy. I mean, yeah. And he works. That's the other thing, too, is any criticism of Haas, like, are you telling me he's not working hard on the offensive end to get that done? You know, now he's not working that hard on the defensive end
because Kalist
was playing great, but it was because Tyler Haas was guarding.
That's the only fair criticism of Haas.
What do you think about the going underneath the screen thing? I think it's what they have to do.
Yeah, we're not athletic enough to go above the screen.
Well, and you also get more fouls that way. So that's the problem. It puts your bigs in more trouble. And get some more potential fouls. You got to go underneath screens. And, you know, everyone's going to be able to shoot threes against BYU. And if you can shoot them well, you'll probably beat us. I mean, that's – you can score on BYU. So, all right. Well, Loyola Marymount, BYU is going to get that game in Los Angeles. And then they're going to go to Malibu. Is there any chance, Tosh, that they're going to be eating too much Christmas goose? And they're just going to be languid and slow.
There's a chance. The Loyola Marymount is the one that scares me.
Really? Yeah, I'm with you.
Just because we're coming off such a big game. Two big emotional highs. The Utah game.
A letdown game.
Two where they were stoked going into it and then were let down. And I just worry that whenever that happens consecutively, the team after that worries you if it's a trap game.
Dave Rose almost never loses three times in a row. So
we go 2-0. That's my prediction until we talk again.
I am with you. Take care and happy holidays.